Good Friday afternoon to you on a Juno afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And today we're going to be highlighting a showing of Silent Night, Deadly Night at the Goldtown Theater. It's High Tide Tattoo, and they're going to be talking about that with Todd Mace, who's here in the studio with me right now. Bill Merck's going to be here to talk about the Wishkanahedehi Poetry Slam. We're also going to be talking to Greg Cheney about the CBJ's new accessory apartment incentive grant program. And Annie B. will be here to talk about KXLL's Soul Dance Disco Sparkle Party. That's happening New Year's Eve at the Alaskan Bar. All that's coming up ahead, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, lots of other great stuff. But first, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Tara Gatewood, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The men known as the Fairbanks Four are home today after an Alaska judge tossed out the murder convictions that sent them to prison almost two decades ago. Superior Court Judge Paul Lyle made the decision after closed-door negotiations Thursday afternoon. KNBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
One of the Fairbanks Four, Marvin Roberts, has been on parole since last summer. George Fries, Kevin Pease, and Eugene Vent were released from the Fairbanks Correctional Center Thursday evening. Within a few hours, the four had joined hundreds of their supporters at a potluck dinner featuring moose, salmon, and much more. Victor Joseph, president of the regional tribal entity Tanana Chiefs Conference, says the crowd was exuberant.
They're doing a little bit of eating, celebrating, some traditional dance, and just having a good time. A lot of laughing and a little bit of crying and a lot of celebrating.
The men's release comes after a grassroots effort of individuals and organizations ranging from the Alaska Innocence Project and a college journalism professor to the Alaska Federation of Natives and U.S. Senators for Alaska. Free the Fairbanks Four blogger April Monroe was 16 years old when she and some friends attended the same wedding the Fairbanks Four went to the night of the murder.
We knew they were innocent. We knew that at random, you know, four of us had just been taken.
Monroe says she hopes the release of the Fairbanks Four is the first of many to correct what she calls miscarriages of justice due to systemic bias and racism in Alaska's law enforcement and judicial systems. Victor Joseph says the men who entered prison 18 years ago as teenagers now face the hard work of community reentry. Tanana Chiefs Conference has set up a Wells Fargo bank account for donations to help the Fairbanks Four. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
The agreement finalized in a six-hour negotiation session dismisses the conviction against all four men. In return, they agree to drop claims of prosecutorial misconduct and cannot sue the state or city of Fairbanks for damages. Christmas came early to a First Nation in Manitoba this year, but it was bittersweet. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the Shoal Lake 40 First Nation receives something they've been fighting for nearly a century.
The reserve on the Manitoba-Ontario border was cut off 101 years ago. That's when an aqueduct was built to carry fresh water from Shoal Lake to Winnipeg. But to do that, a canal had to be built, leaving the First Nation virtually an island and cut off from the mainland, except during the winter months when the lake freezes over. But that was fraught with dangers, and many members of the community died over the years as their vehicles went through the ice as they tried to cross. The reserve has been without clean water for 18 years. A new water treatment plant was considered to be too expensive to build without a road. Now Freedom Road, at a cost of $30 million, will connect Shoal Lake 40 to the Trans-Canada Highway. Erwin Redsky is Shoal Lake's chief.
The thousands of acres in land taken was our land, Shoal Lake 40 Reserve land. And it was taken without our permission.
Now Red Sky says it's time to move forward and not dwell on the past. The money for the road comes from the Manitoba government, the Canadian government, and the city of Winnipeg. Freedom Road is also a lifeline for residents who want to work off-reserve but can't sustain those jobs because they could not safely get in or out of their community. And for many who live outside the reserve, it's a road home. I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Tara Gatewood.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Kawanic Broadcast Corporation is accepting artwork and reservations for the Alaska Native Art Auction, taking place February 18, 2016 in Anchorage, Alaska. Over 400 business leaders and executives attend this annual event. Proceeds benefit Kawanic's news programming. Learn more at knva.org.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARC. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from GCI Wireless with coverage in 200 communities throughout Alaska. More details on available plans and devices at gci.com.
Support for this station comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, located at 105 Savico Road in Douglas. Treadwell Ice Arena is open 7 days a week, offering drop-in, open skating, hockey, and a variety of special events. We are the proud home of the Crimson Bears hockey team, youth, adult, hockey, and figure skating programs. More information at juno.org/parksrec/ice rink or call 586-0410.
And welcome back to a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein. I'm with you today for the next, 50 minutes or so. Todd Mace has joined me in the studio. Todd, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having
me. Todd, you're doing this awesome thing along with High Tide Tattoos. Your business, of course, is Pixel and Plume that you do with your lovely and talented wife, Melissa Leanne Griffiths.
That's correct. Yeah,
and I know her. She's a good person, talented person, just like you. And you have this... How did this? I know a lot about this already because I talked to you and her about it. But how did the idea of wanting to do a special horror holiday themed thing at Gold Town happen, and all these extras that you're going to do? How'd that all come about?
It's definitely not my original idea. I did live in Seattle for quite a while, and they have a lot of independent theaters like the Gold Town and. While I was living there, I attended a bunch of these functions that are similar. And since I've been up here for about 5 years and, I've been doing different things with the community, like music projects, and I'm a volunteer on KXLL, as you know.
Yes.
And things like that. This was just kind of, I don't know if it's the next logical step to have a horror movie night around Christmas, but becoming friends and acquaintances with the crew over at High Tide, Dave Lang, the owner, we're talking about one day. He's like, that's something I've always wanted to do as well. And so we just decided to team up and, put it together.
Nice. And so I've been hearing a lot about some of the special goodies that people will get when they go to this. Can you tell me about some of the interesting things that will happen?
Yeah, we wanted to give gift bags. And, of course, the first thing that came to mind was, making barf bags as gift bags to go along with the theme. And it's funny because it's actually received, I guess I can call it, national attention. There was a guy out in Boston, or there is a guy out in Boston, who apparently is the first and foremost collector of decorative barf bags in the United States.
And someone's got to be.
Somebody has to be. There's a whole series on YouTube. He has a video. The guy's name is Steve Silberberg.
Okay.
Out of Boston. And I watched the video today for the first time, and he's just a normal dude. Looks pretty normal is what I will say, but he just has a really weird hobby of collecting barf bags. Anyway, he sent us an email yesterday requesting one.
Nothing wrong.
Yeah, so a barf bag is just the vessel for some of the gift items. My wife and I, as you mentioned, we do Pixel and Plume Design Co., so we do graphic design and things like that. So we decorated the barf bag with a stamp.
Now, where do you get a barf bag? Did you have to order them in mass or what?
Yes, there is a company called Barf Boutique. And they're the only company I could find on Amazon or the interwebs that sold just a plain white bag.
All right.
So, but more expensive than what I thought. They're about 80 cents a pop. So
for a bag.
For a bag.
It's plastic lined. I mean, it's lined, right? It's got to be kind of water tight.
Liquid tight, yeah, for sure.
And then it's got the clips on the top, kind of like a coffee bag kind of thing.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Do your business and roll it up and throw it away.
God, horrible to even think about, isn't it? But you've got it filled with all kinds of... Now, is this movie kind of a cult movie? Kind of a,
absolutely.
Oh, okay. So I remember this. I remember this movie, but I didn't know it had attained sort of cult status. So tell me a little bit about the movie itself.
Well, it's kind of a... It had a rough beginning. It came out in 1984. It is now considered a cult classic. And it only lasted in theaters for about a week and a half before they pulled it because people were so disgusted by it. But it did make about $2.5 million, which is a success for them.
It cost less than that to make, I'll bet, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, I caught wind from the original executive producer. We've had to be in contact with him to secure the movie rights and all that stuff. And he's like, there's theaters all over the nation right now playing this movie.
All right.
So it does have a following. A couple of people I know here in town absolutely love it. They've seen it, but they're definitely coming out to watch it on the big screen.
Very cool.
One of the best things to watch about it is on YouTube. They have a Roger Ebert review of it where they don't really review the movie so much. They just kind of denounce it as it. They don't think it's a movie. They think it's one of the worst things that man has ever created.
I mean, like, it is a motion picture.
It is definitely a movie,
Ebert.
Yes. But
Roger.
But the movie itself, I was trying to think of, like, the best way in a short description. But have you ever seen Batman?
Yes.
Most people have. It starts off similar, where there's a young boy who witnesses his parents' murder, and he finds a coping mechanism. But he doesn't just turn into Santa Claus. He turns into a murdering Santa Claus
wrong.
He has a naughty list, and he's checking it with his knife.
Well, I mean, say no more.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all you need to know. It's got a wonderful holiday theme.
It does.
And
it's caroling.
It is grotesque and awful, and you'll need that bag.
You will.
Yeah.
and we'll also have, you know, garbage cans off to the side, too.
Oh,
so
yes.
Just
well,
in case
good.
It's not enough.
Some moist towelettes.
Yeah. But it's all a good fun. You know, one of the things working with Colette over at Goldtown is she's been a big supporter of, you know, having more community-involved events. As you know, that's her gig mostly anyways. But, you know, having some outside influence into the movie scene is what she's going for.
That's awesome. So, what she's been doing over there, just, I mean, really, it's become such a center point for really fun, amazing cultural things going on, and a little bit on the fringe, right? And a little
definitely.
Bit, it's a place you can go and get weird, right?
It is encouraged.
Yeah, weirdness is
highly
encouraged.
I've never met Costa. She encourages it. So.
Tell me a little bit about Dave Lang at High Tide Tattoo, about their involvement with the project.
Oh, you
and
know,
he's not. He was going to be here. He's not here. Why? Because he's tattooing.
He
right
is,
now.
And he's probably listening right now. So.
Hello.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, Dave. Because great work.
Definitely.
He does great work.
He's never done great work.
Yeah, I'm untattooed, but
I have one piece by him and one piece by Devin, and
right.
I'll continue to go there for my work here in town. But their involvement has been, you know, I guess I just 50-50. You know, his crew over there has been helping quite a bit with the coordinating of just the whole event in general. You know, and last night, you know, it's just been a collaborative effort. Like last night, the whole crew came over and we had a barf bag decorating party, pizza
like
party.
Like you do.
Like you do on a Thursday night.
It's just.
Yeah.
You come over and decorate barf bags.
So in general, High Tide is, you know, much like Goldtown, just a big supporter of community events.
Totally, yeah.
If you look at, you know, event posters around town, I mean, most of them, of the big events have, you know, their logo down because they're sponsoring everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's responsible for so many, like, bands, you know, just like things like that. The last Playboy Spaceman thing that happened, he was, you know, all that stuff. He's just a fan of cool, great music happening, cool cultural events happening.
Yeah, and he's been pushing for a lot more things. Like, he's had two events recently over the Taqueria. If you might have seen it at Gallery Walk, they had Emily Rocky's art up there, who's another tattooer there at the shop. And before that, Jolene, known as Fake Witch, who's a younger artist in town. But hers was the first featured showcase. And he's going to continue to do more of the artist series, and we're going to continue to do more of these movie nights.
All right.
And so this is the first one. It's a good run. It does start. We're going to open the doors at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. We're going to start the movie about 9:30. We'll take an intermission about 50 minutes in, and talking about the prizes and giveaways and things like that. That's also – so for the bag, we have a couple of pins that you know, Dave designed one. I designed two of them. One is the Silent Night, Deadly Night, Deadly Night pin, and I designed this sweet Krampus button last night, so we got one of those, and you know, some stickers and things like that, and we do have some prizes that we're going to give away. But the barf bags are limited to the first 30 people, just a bunch of goodies in them, and then we're going to give away about five prizes.
Oh, very cool.
So different artwork from High Tide, one of the posters I designed. Colette's throwing in like two sets of passes for Gold Town itself, and so we have some fun stuff.
That all sounds great. It's going to be a lot of fun. I understand that High Tide is also going to be at the Naughty and Nice Beer and Wine Tasting at the Jack from 5 to 8 p.m.
Yeah, they're
going to have these limited edition High Tide merchandise available there, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, they are. They're going to have a merch booth there at the Naughty and Nice, and then they're going to bring some of it over to the theater later on as well.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah, if you didn't check out any of this stuff from Gallery Walk, that's what they're going to have tonight, among other things.
All right.
So,
is that tonight? Is it the Naughty and Nice? That's tomorrow night.
Sorry, everything's tomorrow night.
Everything's tomorrow night. Naughty and Nice thing and all that. Tonight's the smoked porter tasting out at the brewery.
Yes.
I'll
be there.
It's going to be fun. All right. So that's Todd Mace. Thanks so much from Pixel and Plume and co-sponsor of this High Tide tattoo horror film, Silent Night.
Deadly Night.
All right, that's going to be a lot of fun. One more time, it's happening at 9 o'clock tomorrow night is when doors open.
Yes.
This movie will start around 9:30 or so.
Yes.
Fun prizes. Get there early to get one of the gift bags.
Yeah, and don't forget, it is 18 and up only. We do have Rockwell. They're going to have a little bar set up. It's going to be a cash-only bar. And, you know, lastly, we are going to ask for, you know, a small donation at the door. Not required, but all of this we're paying out of pocket, so we're just going to try to recoup a little bit of it.
That's cool.
So
seems like only right. Pass the hat, right?
Yep, for sure.
All right. Sounds like a great event. Thanks, Ty, for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome back to a Juno Afternoon, and with me now is Greg Chaney, the Lands and Resources Manager for CBJ. And Greg, you're here to talk about a new accessory apartment incentive grant program.
Right.
I love it. It's a catchy title.
It just kind of rolls off the tongue, you know.
But tell me about it.
It is actually pretty exciting. The City and Borough of Juneau has identified that housing is our number one priority in the community. Actually, we did an economic study and found out that for our economic health of the community, housing is one of the issues that we have to grapple with and solve. So we have a pretty strong pent-up demand for housing, and as a result, one way that we are going to try to help grease the skids and get people to invest in housing is to offer a $6,000 per unit incentive grant for accessory apartments that are built in Juneau in the next year. So the idea is, the program is, if you own a property and you want to put an accessory apartment in there, you get a grant application, fill it out, and you also have to get a building permit application and fill that out, which is no small thing.
Mm-hmm.
You turn them in together at the Community Development Department, the permit center down at the Marine View building on the fourth floor. And when you get your building permit issued, you have 1 year to build your accessory apartment, and the clock starts ticking. And if you get a certificate of occupancy, which means pass a final building inspection within 1 year, you will get a check for $6,000.
So when you first said that, I thought you were saying that the building has to start within 1 year, but it has to actually be complete within 1 year. It
has to be done.
It has to be done and complete and ready for occupancy.
It has to pass a final inspection by the building inspector. So that will what that does is certify that we're not just handing out money to people who think they might want to do this. You have to finish it, then you get the grant. So you have to have the money up front to do this. But then when you complete it, you get a little bit of a bonus.
Very cool. And so what right now, how many of those kinds of accessory apartments do you guys estimate?
We have funding for 12 grants.
Okay.
So the assembly has approved funding for 12. We'll see how it goes. If that goes really quickly and we're able to identify a source of funds, we might put more money. When I say we, I mean the city assembly. Will put more money into the program. If it languishes and it's not very popular, it's not really, you know, we don't go through those 12, we'll wait until we get the 12 done and then kind of take a look. And I should mention the first day we're accepting applications is Monday.
Okay.
So this is Friday, so you can work on your plans on the weekend. But Monday morning is when that's our launch date, which is December 21st. Is that really close to Christmas?
Yes, I think it is. Yeah, it's happening. Okay. I think it's next Friday. I know.
Presents or something. I don't know.
You got to get on the stick, man. tell me about the $6,000 figure. Was that a figure that was carefully considered, or was there a kind of lump sum?
Was pretty carefully considered. Originally, the assembly had been looking at a $5,000 grant program. They kind of didn't feel comfortable with that, went back to staff. We looked at what it costs. You know, this is a small percentage of what it costs to build an accessory apartment. I mean, in the best case scenario, this might be a 10% of the cost. And usually it'll be quite a bit smaller percentage because the cost will be more. But, that's it. I mean, part of it is just what we could afford. We have $72,000 in this program, and we split it up for 12 grants, so we have $6,000 per unit.
Is there a typical kind of accessory apartment that happens? Is it a refurbished basement or a mother-in-law apartment over a garage, that kind of thing?
Well, that's very common, both of those. You're also allowed to build a just completely detached apartment, which would look just like a little small house. The one thing that you need to know is that it's 600 square feet or that's kind of a rule of thumb. If you have a larger lot, there's a kind of a complicated formula where you might be able to build something that's a little bigger. But I'm going to send people to the permit center to ask those questions because you have to know a lot of specifics. And but the 600 square feet is very broadly approvable, but it's that's an upper limit. So it's basically a studio or one-bedroom apartment and intended for one or two people to live in, maybe a small family. If you have a wee little kid, 600 square feet of work.
So are you saying 600 square feet is the maximum amount for this kind of apartment to get the grant or the minimum?
It's the maximum size allowed.
Oh, okay.
And the reason that is these apartments are intended to be infill development where you're putting them in existing neighborhoods. Like you're saying, well, what about your basement? What about above your garage? So what you're doing is you're putting additional housing units within existing neighborhoods. And so the Planning Commission or the Assembly set a maximum, said, okay, up to 600 square feet. It's kind of self-limiting. You maybe have two people in an apartment that big, probably not three. And we can put those in with existing homes. And rather than build an apartment complex somewhere, we're putting a one unit with a house, you know, pairing it. And that's kind of nice because it spreads renters out amongst the regular, I won't say regular, but amongst the other homeowners,
right,
property owners. And so you don't just have a whole block of apartments.
Sure.
It makes for a nice neighborhood.
Yeah, and it just increases the density that a neighborhood can handle as far as how many people, how many families are living there.
Yeah, yeah. And we have a big demand for one-bedroom apartments right now in town. So that's part of it. And let me think.
Is that demand year-round, that demand for one-bedroom apartments? It seems like during session, of course.
It probably fluctuates.
Yeah.
We have a really strong rental market right now, and so I would say there is a year-round demand, but certainly it peaks both at the beginning of the tourist season and the beginning of the legislative session. You tend to get a lot more people in for short times, and they want a six-month rental or something. So I've talked to several people who have accessory apartments already, and they tend to get a lot of legislative staff and that sort of thing, or lobbyists. And then you also get the summer workers for various tourist things or fisheries. So it's a, you know, it's a pretty broad thing. Other people have had the same renter for 10 years, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, part of it's what you want to do, where you live, all those things. But it's available to anyone in the community.
Are there requirements, like there needs to be a separate entrance or things like that? Or
well, you have to meet the building code. And so, and that's kind of a big topic, so I won't go into that. There used to be a lot of specific requirements, like the second entrance couldn't face the street, and that's all been stripped away. We've been trying to make it simpler, more available. It's been very popular, and it's been very successful. It's kind of a stealth way of adding apartment units in town. Instead of getting a lot of new development, we haven't had that many new apartment complexes go in.
Mm-hmm.
Part of that is because these accessory apartments are being added.
All right. So it's the accessory apartment incentive grant program. Is there a place, I guess Juneau.org is a place where people can go under the clerk?
The city webpage, under Hot Topics, we have a link to some information. You're also welcome or encouraged to drop by or call the Permit Center. Now, as I said before, the Permit Center is downtown in the Marine View building on the fourth floor. If you get off the elevator, there's a giant red arrow pointed on the wall in front of you, Permit Center. So it's so big, sometimes people don't even see it. It's funny. But then if you want to call, I can give you a phone number.
Sure.
586-0770. That's 586-0770.
And that's for information about the Accessory Apartment Incentive Grant Program, a way to increase the density of families living in already existing neighborhoods, and something that's trying to deal with the housing crunch that we've got and the demand for one-bedroom apartments or smaller apartments, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I wanted to mention that people who are building should call for their final inspection a little bit in advance of that final deadline, because you have to pass your final inspection. A lot of times the final inspection, people will come in and, or the inspectors will come in and they'll find a, I don't know, a little electrical issue or something. You have to fix that before you can get your certificate of occupancy. So we say give yourself about a month. Call for that final inspection about a month ahead of time. And if you don't pass it, then you have time to fix it and still get it within the time frame. There are no extensions.
Okay. All right. Well, good advice. Well, Greg Chaney, thanks so much. That's Greg Chaney, Lands and Resources Manager for the city. Appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Thank
you. That's the Accessory Apartment Incentive Grant Program. If that sounds like something you're interested in, apply for it. All right. Coming up right now, here is Garrison Keillor with the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 18th of December, 2015. It's the birthday of Charles Wesley, born in Epworth, England, 1707. His older brother, John Wesley, was the preacher, and Charles was the writer of hymns and the song leader. The two of them went to Oxford, and they looked for deliberate ways to serve God throughout the day. And because of this, their fellow students made fun of them for how methodical they were, and they named them Methodists, and they picked up the name and promoted the Methodist movement in Great Britain, traveled around the country preaching in the open air to tens of thousands of people. John did the preaching. Charles led the faithful in hymns. Hymn books were expensive, and many people couldn't even read, so the song leader would read out a line at a time, and everybody would sing it. Charles Wesley wrote 8,989 hymns. We know him for Love Divine, All Loves Excelling, and Christ the Lord is Risen Today, and Hark the Herald Angels Sing. It's the birthday of the artist Paul Klee, born in Münchenbuchsee, Switzerland, 1879. Died at the age of 60, leaving behind about 9,000 works of art, and also the Paul Klee notebooks. It's the birthday of one of the great baseball players of all time, Ty Cobb, born Narrows, Georgia, on this day in 1886. His father didn't want him to become a ball player, wanted him to be a doctor or a lawyer, but finally, when Ty Cobb was leaving home, his father told him, "Don't come home a failure." Cobb was 18 years old, and 3 weeks before he made his debut with the Detroit Tigers, his mother shot and killed his father outside their bedroom window. Apparently, she thought he was an intruder. It's the birthday of Fletcher Henderson, the jazz pianist, born Cuthbert, Georgia, 1897. Best known to us as a jazz arranger, he made arrangements that emphasized the horns and left room for improvised solos between the arranged passages. It was a new sound for big band jazz. Here's a poem for today by Greg Watson, The Leaving. I will not miss this place, but for the paraffin glow of the young nurse's face, blonde and almond-eyed, strange comfort of the flashlights blinking on and off as she makes her nightly rounds, seemingly without steps to check if you are still breathing, kneeling at the bedside to ask, are you still awake? Do you need a pill? As outside the window a dull gray snow is falling into absence, and you cradle a thought no longer there as if it mattered, as if anything but her cool, soft hands offering the drowse-inducing Eucharist made sense anymore, as if a mind drawing circles to mark eternity and X's for all the suffering that implies could contain anything more than the purposeful spark of fine, subtle hips turning toward the door, a leaving so gentle and assured that it makes you feel nearly at home in this world once again. The Leaving, a poem by Greg Watson, from All the World at Once, published by Noden Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, a monthly devoted to discovering and publishing new voices in poetry. More at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Juno Arts and Humanities Council is hosting their second annual Naughty or Nice Beer and Wine Tasting. This fundraising event takes place on December 19th at the Jack from 5 to 8 p.m. The tasting will begin at 5 p.m. sharp, followed by a no-host bar at 7 p.m., along with the first Lumberjack and Jill Beard and Mustache Contest. Proceeds benefit the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Information and tickets at the Jack, Hearthside Books, and Jack.org.
Help but dance when the boogie starts to roll.
Ow!
Andy Klein back in the studio with you. Andy B. from over there, way over there on KXLL, has come over to join me.
Better believe it.
To talk about something that's coming up
hot. Oh, my God. But yes,
it'll be fun.
That's it.
KXLL's doing a soul dance disco sparkle party on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, we are.
Woo!
And everyone over 21's invited.
I love it. So tell me a little bit about it. What's going on? It's happening New Year's Eve. It's at the Alaskan Bar.
Oh, yeah. Scott's turning us loose. We're going to give up the funk. It's going to be balloons, sparkles, disco balls. It's basically going to be Studio 54. We're going to boogie harder than all of our parents did in the 80s.
That's impossible.
I know. My mom told me the bars were open to like 5 a.m.
It was amazing.
And I'm like, what happened? Did you know? Why?
It was a different time.
It was.
It was a more innocent time and a less innocent time somehow, strangely.
Yes, in the stories I've heard. I hope my mom from the 80s comes to the party.
There you go. That's all you can hope for.
And, but I'm going to bring her record. She doesn't know that yet.
All right.
I discovered she has like every album ever made by the Ohio Players.
Can't
go wrong.
Oh, so good.
So yeah, it's going to be disco, soul, dance, funk party all night, 9 o'clock till close.
Nice. I used to buy the Ohio Player albums just for the album covers.
No, yes.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Oh.
Taste the honey.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, I liked when you were describing it to me. You were basically, I could see in your mind, it's a bunch of sparkly disco ladies.
Yes.
Right? That's what you've got in your mind.
Yes, yes. That dress you have in your closet that you're waiting to wear one night of the year, this is your night.
Oh, I know the sparkly dress you're going to wear.
I have so many. So I think I'm going to wear a different outfit every single hour.
Oh, okay.
I have this sparkly gold skirt from Bohem with tights for when I really want to break it down. And then I have some classier and longer dresses, but I just feel like...
Well, when you said tights, that reminded me of disco tights.
Disco tights?
Back in those disco tights. This was before yoga pants. Forget yoga pants. Yoga pants is happening now, but disco tights.
Pales in comparison.
Oh, my goodness. That was the era of just tight disco pants,
tight everything.
I guess. Yeah.
Just oh, man.
Everything was...
Yeah, so we're hoping to...
And big hair. Oh, the
hair. It's going to be big. We're hoping there's going to be a photo booth, too, so people can capture the moment. We're hoping to have a sparkle pageant and crown the most sparkliest human. There'll be some runner-ups, for sure. Also, a Soul Train dance contest at midnight.
They're going to break it. You're going to break it down, the Soul Train,
yeah.
The dance contest?
I'm Don Cornelius.
You're going to do it all? Oh, I love it.
It's my
exciting.
Live stream.
I understand there is a call going out, a needed item.
Yes.
What's going on there?
We're looking for a disco mirror ball, a glass mirror ball. We're hoping for 18 inches or bigger, but anything will do. We're just trying to turn that place upside down, inside out.
Burn that mother down.
You can say that again. And we're also looking for people to do performances if... Like, we're trying to schedule it out. If you are a member of a dance crew in Juneau, if you're a drag queen who knows how to get sparkly, we want you to perform at the Soul Dance Disco Sparkle Party.
I get this now. I'm starting to get this. There might be other things going on that night. Of course, it's New Year's Eve, right? Lots of stuff going on. But,
but
this is the concentrated gathering of the fabulous people.
Yeah, I mean...
That's what's going on here, right?
You might not be able to get in. Because it's going to be just like Studio 54.
Number one, if you're not fabulous that night, you're not getting in. I mean, that's right. I don't care. If you don't show up fab, forget it, I think.
Can we hire you, Andy?
I'm out of town. I would be there. You know I'd be there.
I know.
I gotta, yeah.
I like to boogie.
It's going to be, this is going to play.
Yeah. You don't even have to know how to dance. You can just...
I know it's radio and no one can see us dancing, but we are breaking it down in here right now.
I am so excited for this party because it happened. Andrea and Patty, PK, we all work at K2, and we were just sitting around thinking, like, where are we going to go to New Year's? Like, we're not sitting in. We're not going...
Yeah.
We just need that one place where our outfits will be appreciated.
And the Alaskan, of course, the Alaskan.
And the ambiance there, we're just hoping to change into this super fabulous super club.
So are you guys going to get in there early in the day and you're going to be decorating?
Oh, yeah,
Alaskan
we're going to be in
day?
There at 8 a.m.
Is that right?
I mean, we're just kicking Scott Fry out
going
to town. just kidding. He's going to be the maitre d'.
No, he'll be in there, too. He's fabulous.
He is one fabulous man.
Yeah. So that's an exciting thing just on its own to walk into the Alaskan and have it look completely different, like it's a metamorphosized, completely different space than you normally get. The disco ball hanging down, getting some lighting in there, you get some sparkling going on, you got the contests. It's going to be a dance party, of course, the disco party. So of course it's the dance party. And I love the Soul Train edition as well.
Well, there's just so many good dancers in Juneau, let's be real here. And I want to see everybody be in that Soul Train line. We might videotape it.
Yeah. Right? I think you should.
It's all part of the plan. But we'd love to have you there. There's no cover. And you're supporting great public radio in Juneau just by coming out.
So, All right. Tell everyone just sort of when it's starting, some of that stuff one more time.
So it's starting around 9 o'clock. That's when the records are coming out. And we're going to start spinning. It's going to go until close. But you really want to be there at midnight because that's when the Soul Train dance competition happens. If you'll check our Facebook event, we haven't created it yet because this is so hot off the press. But we should have a schedule of events that people can come. And if you're interested in performing at our Soul Train dance party, the Sound of Philadelphia, oh, man.
You
can email me.
Did you say Soul Train?
Yeah.
Soul Train.
MFSB, Mother, Father, Sister, Brother.
Yes.
The Sound of Philadelphia.
I love it.
Oh, man. Get in touch with me, Annie, A-N-N-I-E, at KTOO.org. And we'll try and find a spot for you in the night. But this is your chance to shine, Gino. You are personally invited to the most exclusive and fabulous party of 2016.
It's happening New Year's Eve. So we'll talk about this a little bit more in a minute. But tell me what's going on in KXLL these days. What's happening over there? What's going on? I heard a great piece this morning on what Liz and Pat Troll are up to these days. That was really cool to hear.
We've added
Liz
news
Snyder
on
Pat
KXLL. Some national news breaks, some local news breaks at the bottom of the hour, some of the hours. We've also revamped some of our music, so a lot of the cuts you haven't heard in a while, a lot of new music there, and we're always seeking listener input. You can message us through Facebook.
And whenever Annie says this to me, she always looks at me like she's about to hurt my feelings. that she's putting in new music.
No, Andy, like, I grew up worshiping this station and, like, just fangirling forever, and my friends didn't get it. I was like, you don't understand, 100.7, it's public radio now, you know what that means, right? And they're like, yeah, they just play Rolling Stones, I guess. But no, it's really cool to be there, and we've really tried to build upon the ideas that you put down.
So that's nice.
It hasn't switched up too much.
We've
kept the same model.
I think it's great. I love listening to it. It just sounds fresher and newer, and there's new cuts in there, a lot of great new music in there. You always could rely on it for new music, but... But lately, as you've just come in and as the program director, you actually ran into a little bit of a technical snafu that happened over there, which was rough. You kind of lost a big part of a database that kind of ran.
But we rebuilt it better than ever before.
Yeah, so
we took a lot of time a lot of tweaking, and we're tweaked out.
That's a little inside baseball stuff there on what was going on behind the scenes, but that was a big challenge as you came in as the new program director, so that was a cool thing to have to do that. But as you said, it forced you to look at every single song you're playing, and it really shows. It's sounding great over there.
Handpicked.
Okay, so, and you got any other events kind of scheduled up that we might want to just preview a little bit for folks? Just this New Year's
one,
huh?
My mind is just...
The New Year's one.
Yeah, I'm working on my dance routines, and I'm just so excited. I watch a lot of YouTube, Soul Train YouTube videos.
Anything by the Spinners... Just watch Soul Train YouTube videos, whether this party's involved or not, because it'll enrich your life.
True story.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing some dance vids on our Facebook page. James Brown's got a good one I'm right about to post, so stay tuned.
Very good. All right, Annie B. from KXLL. It's the Soul Dance Disco Sparkle Party. It's happening New Year's Eve at the Alaskan Bar. If you got a disco ball out there, a big one, let Annie B. know. You can Facebook her or whatever you want to, you know, get in touch over there. You can call their phone number, 463-6499, and let them know. And Annie B., thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Andy.
It's going to be fun. All right. Thanks for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. We're going to get with some more great stuff happening in town here, including Bill Merck's going to be here with us in just a minute to talk about the Wishkanadei Poetry Slam coming up. But first, here is Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Christmas tree plantations may not be the best habitat for wild birds, but they do hold an attraction for northern saw-whet owls. These miniature owls seem to feel at home in the small evergreens. And when the birds are spotted, they're most likely to remain motionless rather than fly away. So it's not surprising that, a few years ago, a saw-whet owl in Oregon took a long, strange trip. In the middle of December, a lovely little evergreen was cut down on an Oregon tree farm. Turns out, this tree already had an ornament, a tiny saw-whet owl hunkered close to its trunk. The tree, owl and all, was wrapped in a mesh bag and off it went to British Columbia. The owl traveled in its needly prison in a stack of Christmas trees for a week or more. Imagine the surprise of the family who found it. Fortunately for that little owl, a wildlife rehabilitator nearby knew just how to take care of a hungry, dehydrated owl. It was nursed back to health and regained its life in the wild. So, if you buy a Christmas tree this year, you may get more than you bargained for. Hey, I hope I do. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
That was a bird chirping there towards the end. Bill Merk has joined me. And, Bill, I'm going to say it one more time. I'm going to try to say it the Whoosh Kanadeyi.
There you go.
All right. Absolutely perfect. Poetry Slam. Thank you. And it's happening tonight. Bill Merk, thanks so much for coming in. You're co-hosting it tonight. Tell me a little bit about your co-host and about the event as you see it happening tonight.
Well, I'm hoping it's well attended. There's a lot of other things going on tonight, but
some movie opening,
some beer tasting thing going on.
I don't know.
I'm hoping people want to get their poetry on for a couple hours anyway.
Well, it hasn't been a problem for you guys at all getting a crowd for these poetry slams.
No,
right? You guys can pack it out.
The community is very, very receptive. It's just amazing. Every month we get new people, more people. Doesn't matter what the venue is. It's great.
People have never been to a poetry slam. Describe it a little.
It's a competitive poetry event. The event is open to the first 8 slammers who sign up. We run. Each poet gets 3 minutes to recite their poem. No music, no juggling, no hula dancing, just them and their words. We have judges from the audience. Judges give out the scores to the 8 poets. The top 4 move on, go to another round. Top 2 move on, and then we have a mano-a-mano poetry off at the end. And the winner takes home $25 and gets invited to our Grand Slam in October.
Well, that's cool. So are there kind of ringers out there? Are there people out there that win a lot, or is it pretty evenly distributed?
It's a wide range, really. Uh-huh. It's a wide range of talent. It seems like someone new wins every month. We have some people who've been doing this for a long time, and I won't say they're more polished, but they're more visible.
Mm-hmm.
You see them a little more frequently. But that's not to say that we can't be blown away by somebody off the street. That's happened all the time.
Yeah.
My co-host tonight, Erica Berggren, hadn't heard her before. She came up. She's won a couple slams now. A very well-possessed young woman, very poised, very well-versed, great writer. I think we'll have some fun tonight. Looking forward to it.
Is there a style that's typical of Poetry Slam as far as that competitiveness? Is it any style that fits with what the person's doing is what works?
Yeah. In Juneau, it's a little bit different from Poetry Slams that you may have seen or heard around the country. We like to bill ourselves as the most fun you'll ever have at a competition. Very friendly, very supportive audience. Some Poetry Slams in other parts of the country, the poets will come back and polish and polish and polish, and you hear the same work all the time until they think they can have it, you know, perfect to win their scores. In Juneau, it's competitive, but it's not a cutthroat competition. People come in from all walks of life, all types of poetry. We've had haiku, we've had limericks, we've had, epics, we've had angst-ridden poetry, and we've had the, over the rainbow kind of stuff, too. And it all works. It just depends on the audience, the feel, and the presentation of the poet.
How did you get into it?
I probably listened to too much Bob Dylan as a child is what it was for me.
Well, that's a good place to start.
You could do worse, right? I started back when I was in high school.
You've been reciting. Then it wasn't even called, this was before slams, right?
Right. Probably. No, that was just more of a writing thing for me. I got into the slam portion of it. I attended some slams when I lived in Seattle
okay.
a while back. And then when I got to Juneau and met Nahan and Christy Erickson, They wanted to create a safe space for folks to get up and share. It's about the poetry, but it's also about community and voice. I think that's probably more of what we're interested in, is just getting people out there to feel safe and be able to share to a supportive audience. So for me, when I started going to these, they start, Wish Cannot AE began in 2010 as the Juno Poetry Slam, and then it was renamed a little bit later. But just going to those from 2010 until now, just kind of, you keep going, and pretty soon you're part of the family. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just how it works.
Now, aren't you also a song? Don't you also a musician as well?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you're not. Okay. So when you're thinking about, it's funny because you mentioned Dylan, and I think a lot of times people think of music lyrics as poetry, and sometimes they can be, but a lot of times they're not.
True.
Right. And
true.
So do you think, when you're writing poetry, do you sort of think of how you're going to say it out loud, or is it more an internal process and putting words on pages that you think creates a structure?
It starts internally. Yeah,
okay.
That's the way it begins for me. I've been a fan of music forever, but for me it's always been more on the lyrical side. You know, I love music as music, but for me it's all about the lyrics, not to date myself, but the Leonard Cohens, the Joni Mitchells, all those folks, you know, real solid writers whose lyrics hold up as well as poetry as they do as a song. So for me, that was my inspiration. But no, it starts internally. I think for a lot of us, it starts that way. And then once you get it on the page, if you're thinking about getting up in front of people, the poet kind of gets into the recitation side of it, and the poem can morph a little bit, and it just becomes more oral than what you read on the page.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff that you'll see, you'll hear in a poetry slam, sometimes it translates well to the written page, sometimes not. Again, it depends on presentation and how the focus is set up by the writer. So
yeah, because there's some poetry, of course, that's meant to be read, you know, just
mm-hmm.
meant to be looked at. It's
mm-hmm.
even can be structurally designed to be looked at.
Sure.
You can do things with spacing and those kinds of things. But then there's other poetry, I think, that doesn't really live until it's spoken or until it's somehow either not exactly performed, but at least said out
mm-hmm.
loud and
mm-hmm.
performed.
I would
out
agree.
Loud. Yeah,
I would agree.
Do you kind of divide your work between different styles? I'm sure
mm-hmm.
maybe not intentionally, or maybe so.
The poems kind of write themselves
yeah.
that way. You know, you'll start out with something you think would be great orally, and then you look at it on the page and you go, yeah, maybe that's the best forum, the best venue for that. So it
yeah.
kind of depends on the work.
Well, tell me about what's happening tonight, when people can go and that sort of stuff.
It's at Heritage on Front Street tonight. The sign-ups start at 6. First poem should drop about 6:30. A little bit different for those folks who've come to our events in the past. We just started Season 6 last month. We were out at the new library, which is just a fantastic
yeah.
venue. That was so much fun. But we've changed our format a little bit. We used to have events where you would have an open mic first, and then you would have a competitive slam after that, and you'd take a break in between. We've kind of stepped away from that this year for Season 6. We have open mics. We did an open mic last month in November. Tonight's just a competitive slam, and then in January we're going to have a workshop. At Kindred Post, I believe Christy's going to be teaching that. So every third month, you'll have a slam. Every third month, you'll have
a workshop,
and then you'll have an open mic. So it's going to rotate
cool.
on a monthly basis.
And which is this one?
Tonight's just the competitive slam.
Okay, and so if people want to do that, what should they bring, or what?
Bring three original works. Plan on three rounds. I mean, if you're the successful poet who the judges find successful is not the right word. If you're the poet who garners the most points from the judges, put it that way.
Well, it is a competition.
It is a competition.
So.
It is a competition.
It's friendly and fun, but it's...
but
yeah.
there is a goal for
yeah,
some to
right.
get to that top and get that invitation to the Grand Slam. So, yeah, you need to bring three original poems. Poems cannot be any longer than 3 minutes. Or you start losing points from that, so there is a structure to the event.
So tell me about the grading and the point system. How does that? What is it all based on?
Well, we pull the judges out of the audience. We have five sets of judges, or five judges themselves. You can be a team, you can be an individual. We give the judges scorecards 0 to 10, and we just ask the judges A, to be consistent, and B, just to be good listeners. You don't have to know anything about poetry. It helps, but it's not a requirement. You know, we just want to have that give and take, that sharing, kind of bring the judges into the event. If you're not a judge, You're still in the audience, and you're judging on your own. You're also judging the judges. So it kind of gets convoluted at times. You know, if I give a score that maybe you don't think is warranted, you're more than welcome to shout me down or cheer me on or whatever. So it's just a real fun event, basically. So, yeah, we give the judges the card. The cards, they come out with 5 scores for each competitor. We throw out the high score. We throw out the low score. In case you're married to one of the judges or seeing one of the judges, that kind of thing, kind of take that edge off.
Yeah.
And we take those 3 middle scores, and then we combine that. And then at the end, we tally everything up, and
but
away
there,
you go.
But there is a structure whereby, like, time, there's a time limit. There's things like
right.
that. So there's some sort of a
when you go past, it's we try to be really strict about it. Basically, if you go more than 3 minutes, I'm hosting tonight, and I can't even tell you exactly what it is. But, you know, you lose a certain percentage of a point for however long over the 3 minutes you go. And we have a timekeeper as well as scorekeepers.
Right.
So.
Well, you just want to keep it moving along. You want as many people as possible to be able to compete and that sort of thing. And typically, how many people show up at these?
An average audience would probably be between 40 and 50 folks.
Yeah, it's amazing, right?
So it's
so
good.
Listen to poetry. It's so wonderful.
It's consistent.
Yeah.
When we have our Grand Slam at the Jack in October, we've had 150, 200 people there, so that's a real fun event for us. It's a fundraiser. A lot of the community comes out in support of that, too.
And when does that happen?
It's October. It's usually the third Friday in October.
Okay, so it just happened a couple months ago here, and it builds up, and all the competitors. So every competitor, so it's every 3 months, so there'll be 4, basically,
competitors? We're going to have to look at that.
Yeah,
because typically we take 8.
Okay.
But if we're only having 4 slams, we're going to have to see how we configure that. Typically, if we invite a winner and they can't attend, then we'll take the runner-up. We keep track of all that, so we have other people to reach out to to bring on.
I guess you could do the winner and runner-up or something.
That may be how it works out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it depends, again, on who's in town.
And you have underdogs.
We have underdogs.
Right, and then people are rooting.
Right. Or you have somebody who may win twice. And
yes.
So, you know, then there's the challenge. So it gets interesting when the board and I all get together in September and decide, how are we going to do this?
Well, it's the Wushkanadei Poetry Slam. It's happening tonight right over at the Downtown Heritage Cafe over there at 130 Front Street. It starts at 6:30 p.m.
Sign-up's at 6.
But sign-up's at 6.
And then the first poem will start at 6:30. I would like to mention, too, that Heritage will be selling coffee, and they will have food as well.
Awesome.
So they're staying open until 9 or 9:30 tonight just for us to bring the folks in. So I really hope people turn out and support Heritage. They're a great venue for us.
Yeah, and that's a great longstanding tradition of coffee houses and poetry.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean,
absolutely.
That's kind of where it goes. People can
bring your snaps. Bring your snaps. That's right.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Bill Merck, with Wushkanadei Poetry Slam. Thanks so much, and have a great poetry slam.
My pleasure. Thanks, as always, to K2 for their support.
Okay. That is it for a Juno Afternoon today. I've been your host, Andy Klein. Thanks so much for tuning in. Really appreciate everyone who's had a chance to listen in to Juno Afternoon on this day where it's mostly cloudy, and that's the forecast for tonight as well. And forecast for tomorrow is mostly cloudy skies with isolated snow showers in the morning and then a chance of rain and snow in the afternoon with a little bit of some higher gusts and interior passes in the afternoon of around 20 miles an hour or so. Tomorrow night it's going to be cloudy and a chance of snow and rain and lows around 31 degrees for Sunday and Sunday night. Rain and snow mixed. Highs around 35 and lows around 32 degrees. Have a great weekend, everyone. And thanks again for listening to a Juno Afternoon. And let's bring it out with a little bit more of Soul Train. Just a quick wrap-up on the events we talked about. It's the KXLL Soul Dance Disco Sparkle Party. That's going to be happening New Year's Eve at the Alaskan Bar. The Wushkanadei Poetry Slam is happening tonight, 6:30, at the Downtown Heritage Cafe. 6 o'clock is sign-up. And then tomorrow night, there's the High Tide Tattoo Horror Film Silent Night, Deadly Night, happening at 9 p.m. over at Gold Town Nickelodeon. And that's what's going on.